Deutsche Welle, Africa Link.
Welcome to Africa Link. I'm Isaac Mugabe in Bonn. Coming up on the program, U.S. Ambassador to the United Nations, Samantha Power, currently on a tour of West African countries hit by Ebola epidemic, promises her country's support to stop the virus. We hear from our correspondent in Monrovia.
She was very clear that she has been sent by President Barack Obama to show solidarity with the people of the region.
Zimbabwe's President Robert Mugabe uses the opening of parliament to address the country's social and economic problems, but these Zimbabweans are not impressed.
I think there's nothing, it's just the same old rubbish. But the good thing is that he did not digress like he usually does.
No, I didn't listen to the speech of the president because I was busy trying to make ends meet.
These stories and more to come in the next 25 minutes. Stay with us.
Top story.
U.S. Ambassador to the United Nations, Samantha Power, currently on a tour of West African countries hit by Ebola epidemic, has promised her country's support to stop the virus. She made the pledge while addressing a press conference in Monrovia on Tuesday. Flanked by Liberia's President Ellen Johnson Sirleaf, Ambassador Power commended efforts by Liberian authorities in fighting Ebola, adding that U.S. troops on the ground will continue to construct medical facilities and provide logistical support. More on her visit, I spoke to Julius Kanuba in Monrovia.
Well, basically, she was very excited about the visit of Ms. Samantha Power, the U.S. ambassador to the U.N., and she was pleased that the U.S. has been supportive of the development process of Liberia over the past times, and that the U.S. has now taken a very strong and leading role in the fight against the deadly Ebola virus. And so this visit was a solidarity visit.
What pledges did the U.S. ambassador to the U.N., Samantha Power, make?
Well, she was very clear that she has been sent by President Barack Obama to show solidarity with the people of the region, the regions that have been affected by this deadly Ebola virus, Sierra Leone, Liberia, and Guinea. And so she reaffirmed the U.S. government's commitment to the fight against Ebola. And she spoke about the fear and stigma that the virus is now creating internationally. And so for her, she had come to show solidarity with the people of Liberia. And Isaac, she had a very strong message for the people of Liberia, Guinea, and Sierra Leone, because she struck this point that we are beginning to see results. And in seeing results, she said that we are going to beat this virus.
In what specific ways has the U.S. helped Liberia in combating Ebola?
Well, specifically, the U.S. has been able to deploy about 1,000 troops of medical personnel in terms of from the U.S. military to help build Ebola treatment units across the country. In fact, Ms. Power, while in Liberia, she visited Bonk County, the central region, where the U.S. military has been able to set up an Ebola laboratory to take blood samples as early as possible, because in the past, blood samples or tests had to be done from the capital, Monrovia. And so significantly, the U.S. Government has been playing a leading role in the fight against Ebola, manifested by the deployment of over 1,000 U.S. troops to the country to help build Ebola treatment units across the country.
Ever since they landed, I'm talking about the U.S. military personnel in Liberia, is there something tangible so far that they have done?
Well, yes, tangible in the sense that treatment centers are being built on a rapid scale. The supply of medical equipment has also been increased, and people are beginning to see the tangible results. That is why when Ms. Power spoke, she said that we are beginning to see a slope in the curve. But the curve must somehow end on a very good note. And so, yeah, the U.S. troops are indeed visible, and the results are beginning to really show. And Isaac, if I may go further, and President Ellen Johnson Sirleaf was very clear in her message when she spoke about the need for continuous international support, because in her voice, the Ebola virus should be considered as a global threat.
I was speaking to Julia Scandoba in Monrovia. Now, on a more positive note, the Red Cross has offered hope of a turning point in the battle against Ebola outbreak, saying it had seen a dramatic drop in bodies collected in Liberia's capital. The head of the Liberian Red Cross, Faye Tamba, told DW that his workers picked fewer bodies in the month of October compared to last month.
Quite honestly, the situation in Liberia seems to show a little bit good picture in terms of number of cases that are being reported, both at the treatment unit and even number of cases that we are picking up in terms of dead bodies. Because the Liberian Red Cross is directly involved in collecting bodies from Ebola treatment centers and even from communities. But what we try to send out as a clear message, this in no way suggests that Ebola is getting out of Liberia.
You just mentioned that the number of bodies being collected has drastically fallen. Couldn't this be as a result that people are not reporting cases for fear of being quarantined?
That could be a possibility. That's what I said. Currently, even as Red Cross, we are also launching an investigation to understand clearly why the drop in the number of bodies that have been collected compared to, say, 3 weeks ago. These are things that we don't have very scientific responses to yet. These are possibilities because, like I just told you earlier, people are having fear, take for example, bodies that if they report their dead bodies, they will be cremated. And cremation is not like Liberian, so that could be an obstacle. And the issue of also reporting cases to the Ebola center, yes, people might have a fear that, oh, yes, if we will report this case to the Ebola center, the rest of us could be quarantined. But genuinely, it is also true that in terms of information, especially in the vicinities of the city, people have had a lot of information, and there are some families now who are like taking their people to the ETUs.
There have been reports of people buying death certificates to avoid taking the dead to the crematorium. Can you shed more light on this?
This is something that is not yet authenticated, it's not yet proven, but it is very true that this report was on one of our radio stations here in Liberia. And the government of Liberia, through the Liberian National Police, made some arrests where people are involved into running these computer services on a commercial basis. And they are doing their analysis through these machines to authenticate whether this is true or not.
The U.S. and Germany have now appointed special envoys to help tackle the Ebola epidemic in the countries that have been hardest hit. Isn't this rather noble act too late?
No, I don't see it to be too late. That is why I said for us as Red Cross in Liberia, considering our experience in this country, we said despite this number seems to be coming down, which we are not sure as to what the reason is yet, we are yet scaling up our activities. And part of this scale-up activities, even by the government of Liberia, is to ensure that we have adequate facilities in place, facilities including like ETUs or the Ebola treatment unit or Ebola treatment center, also equipping them with the appropriate medical personnel to be in place. So in my mind, and I think with the Red Cross, it's not too late. It is still very important. It is still very needed to run this kind of services in Liberia.
That was Faye Tamba, the head of the Red Cross in Liberia.
Africa Link, every weekday on DW Deutsche Welle.
Zimbabwe's President Robert Mugabe opened parliament on Tuesday, steering clear of a succession struggle raging in his ZANU-PF party following his wife's secession attempt to force his deputy out of office. Despite Zimbabwe's huge external debt, Mugabe said he would invest in infrastructure, offer free fertilizer and seeds to farmers, and revise tax and labor laws to improve an investment climate clouded by his nationalist policies. But as Columbus Mavunga reports for DW from Harare, some Zimbabweans have said the announcement the 90-year-old leader made in parliament did not inspire them at all because it has become more of a rhetoric.
Officially opening parliament, President Robert Mugabe asked the members of parliament to draft laws that would deal with Zimbabwe's ever-ballooning external debt that is about $10 billion. Zimbabwe wants financial institutions such as the World Bank, the IMF, and the African Development Bank to write off Zimbabwe's external debt.
Our people could have been prejudiced in terms of their pensions and insurance in the changeover from the Zimbabwe dollar to the United States dollar currency. Government is therefore launching a commission of inquiry to establish the processes and methods used to convert pension and insurance policy values from the Zimbabwean to United States dollars. The findings of the commission and the recommendations thereof should assist in restoring public confidence in the local pensions and insurance industry.
It is not only the pension and insurance industry which has collapsed in Zimbabwe. One can even say the entire economy is struggling for the past two decades since President Mugabe's government embarked on a controversial land reform program which displaced experienced white farmers. Since then, it has been mainly hunger and starvation in Zimbabwe. I asked some Zimbabweans if Mugabe's speech in parliament might signal the end of their misery and the hard times they are going through.
I think there's nothing, it's just the same old rubbish. But the good thing is that he did not digress like he usually does.
What were you looking forward to?
I thought he was going to say more about the economic recovery on strategies that they are going to implement, but he never said anything to me.
What do you make of the speech of the president?
No, I didn't listen to the speech of the president.
Why?
Because I was busy trying to make ends meet. Because what's most important to Zimbabweans now is to be able to put food on the table. And listening to the president's speech does not help in that regard.
What do you make of the president's speech?
I didn't listen to it.
Why?
Because I know he's not going to say anything new. Just the same old rhetoric. And most of his speeches, when you look at most of his speeches, they're not implemented, and he doesn't address my concerns, especially economically.
The concerns include unemployment rate, which is estimated to be above 80%, and lack of access to basic commodities such as clean water in Zimbabwe.
Columbus Mavunga reporting from Harare.
Behind the headlines.
Despite protests by local residents, tour operators and human rights groups, the Ugandan government plans to go ahead with the construction of a fourth hydroelectric dam across the Nile River. Power generated by the new Isimba Dam should address the growing demand for energy in eastern Africa, but it will also destroy Uganda's trademark white water tourism. This report by Thomas Kleinfeld in Kampala is now presented by Crispin Mwakideu.
Patched at the source of the Nile, Jinja is a busy place. Last year, more than 19,000 tourists visited the town to enjoy its mountain biking, bungee jumping, but most importantly, to descend the whitewater rapids of the Nile. John Dahl runs a hostel and rafting company in Jinja. After working in Uganda for 18 years, he's convinced the Nile is one of two reasons why people visit the country known as the Pearl of Africa.
Uganda's blessed with fantastic, fantastic weather, climate, and fantastic people. They're incredibly hospitable. But what is the significance of the Nile is that it is a great draw card for tourists. It's unique to East Africa. It's real world class. I would say at this stage, the two real big draw cards for Uganda are the primates and the activities of rafting and kayaking on the Nile.
Uganda's growing tourism industry recently became the country's largest foreign exchange earner, bringing in $1.4 million US dollars in the last fiscal year. But all of that may change when the Isimba Dam is built. The reservoir would flood most of the Nile's white water rapid, shutting down the rafting. The effects of this will be felt throughout the Ugandan tourism industry. A recent study found that visitors spend 73% of their time in Jinja. Here, tourists pay around $340 of the $843 they will spend during their trips. But according to Matovu Bukenya, spokesperson for the Ministry of Energy, the government has to consider the bigger picture.
All investments, bigger investments in this country, depend on power. Therefore, the multiplier effect or benefit of a power station far outweigh the revenues that come out of rafting.
Although the dam may end up creating new job opportunities, it will also change many lives. Juba Kalikwani is a raft guide and former Olympian. He's also one of over 500,000 Ugandans who directly or indirectly earn their income through tourism.
The river in Uganda, I think it has a very big meaning, but the meaning is hidden. I think I've been lucky that I've been in the kayaking and appreciate the river more, because being a Ugandan, I used to go to the river, but I saw it as just water place. But now it is a big source of income, not just for people directly kayaking or rafting, but even the people around.
On September the 22nd, a petition with 15,000 signatures was presented to the Ugandan parliament. Signed by local residents as well as supporters from 68 other countries, it asked for the height of the dam to be lowered to preserve the environment and jobs. But according to Dickens Kamugisha of the African Institute for Energy Governance, the Ugandan government won't be inclined to consider the request.
We are giving this dam to be constructed by China company, and the China government is the one going to provide the funding. But you see, the government of Uganda is very obsessed with funding from outside, especially funding that has no strings attached. Because for us, like the finding from China, where they are not saying no, you need to have free and fair elections. So I'm very sure the most of the companies, they don't like small water dams. And the government, because the government wants that money, they cannot spend any single minute thinking about the small dams.
Jinja residents are now looking to the World Bank, which still has the power to intervene. But with the first stages of construction underway, they are left to wonder what will happen in the future, or, according to Kamugisha, if they'll ever profit from the dam.
The company that actually got this contract of Isimba, to make it even worse, is the company that had gotten the contract for Karuma Dam, and it had provided very wrong information about its capacity, about the previous projects that it had implemented. All of them were found to be completely falsehood. As a country, we are corrupt. There is no doubt about that. And it is that corruption that has been affecting our capacity to reduce the power tariffs and increase our capacity in generation.
That report was compiled by Thomas Kleinfeld in Kampala.
When the sun rises in Africa, tune in to Africa Link every weekday on DW Deutsche Welle. In East Africa, we are on 7,425 kHz. 9,600 kHz, 9,800 kHz, 15,275 kHz. Tune in at 4 UTC.
Let's head to Ouagadougou, capital of Burkina Faso. That was the scene of battles between demonstrators and police on Tuesday, when a massive rally was held to protest against plans to allow the long-serving president, Blaise Compaoré, to extend his rule beyond 30 years. He is one of Africa's longest-serving presidents. Africa Link's Susan Holton has more.
Firing tear gas, security forces charged demonstrators after they apparently ventured too close to parliament. And battles then broke out between the police and stone-throwing youths. The violence erupted at the end of a march in Ouagadougou that opposition leaders claim drew up to 1 million people. Other sources put the number at tens of thousands. Whatever the true figure, there is no doubt that very many citizens are angered at the prospect of President Compaoré extending his long rule still further. Schools and universities have closed for a week of protests, organised to express opposition to the move to prolong Compaoré's 27-year rule by allowing him to seek another term next year. Protesters carried banners reading "Blaze, get out" or "Don't touch Article 37" in reference to the constitutional term limit that would have to be scrapped to let the president seek re-election. For opposition leader Benewende Stanislas Sankara, what is happening is tantamount to a constitutional coup. The ruling party rejects such charges and has accused the opposition of organizing an illegal protest. Kampaore was only 36 when he seized power in a coup in October 1987. His former friend and one of Africa's most loved leaders, Thomas Sankara, was ousted and assassinated. Kampaore has remained in power since then and has been re-elected president four times since 1991, to 2 7-year and 2 5-year terms. In 2005, constitutional limits were introduced, and Kampaore is therefore coming to the end of his second 5-year term. The opposition fears the new rules, which are not expected to take previous terms into account, would enable Kampaore to seek re-election not just one but three more times, paving the way for up to 15 more years in power. The third largest party in parliament said at the weekend it would back the amendment, setting the ruling party on course to obtain the two-thirds majority it needs to make the change without resorting to a referendum as first promised. Opposition leaders have called on the public to blockade Parliament to prevent the review from taking place. Protesters have erected barricades and burned tyres in the capital since the proposal was announced on October the 21st, with hundreds of women demonstrating and secondary school children deserting classes to join the protests, creating major disruptions. Sarah Serame coordinated the women's protest. She told DW they felt they had to speak out and draw attention to the need for social cohesion in the country.
Nous, en tant que femmes et mères, on a décidé de sortir pour interpeller.
60% of the population of Burkina Faso is under 25 and have spent their entire lives under the leadership of one man. Now, with the former French colony stagnating at 183rd position out of 186 countries on the UN Human Development Index, many have had enough. On Tuesday, France urged Burkina Faso's President Compaoré to abide by an African Union charter, stipulating that regional leaders should not try to stay in power by changing the constitution.
Susan Holton with that report on the protests in Burkina Faso.
Opinion.
And in our opinion slot this week, we return to the story you've just listened to on the protests in Burkina Faso. The Burkinabes are not happy that Parliament intends to amend the constitution to allow President Blaise Compaoré run for another term. We now ask, how many terms should any sitting African leader serve before he or she steps down? If you'd like to share your thoughts with us, send an email to feedback.africa@dw.de, a letter to Africa Link, DW53110, Bonn, Germany, or an SMS to country code 49160957595510.
When the sun rises in Africa, tune in to Africa Link every weekday on DW, Deutsche Welle. In West Africa, we are on 9,800 kHz, 12,005 kHz, 15,275 kHz, 17,800 kHz. Tune in at 7 UTC.
And before we leave you, here's a reminder of the stories that we've covered for you in the last 25 minutes. U.S. Ambassador to the United Nations, Samantha Power, on a tour of West African countries hit by Ebola epidemic, promised her country's support to stop the virus. Zimbabweans have told this program President Robert Mugabe failed to address key issues like poverty and unemployment during the opening of parliament. We've also been hearing from a cross-section of Ugandans protesting the construction of a new dam that will bring an end to water rafting as a source of income. That's it for now. I'm Isaac Mugabe in Bonn.